interview with Guy Tell for Great British Landscapes. Hello, Guy.
Hey, Tim. How are you?
I'm okay. I've got a few sets, bits of questions that we've put together that cover a few things I'm interested about, having read about your photography and seen what you've been doing. I'll start off jumping at the deep end. Have you ever had any training in photography? Is your background in art or photography?
Actually, I had a pretty interesting education, and I wrote a blog post about it a while back. I haven't had any formal education in art or photography, but I spent quite a bit of time in the academy taking all kinds of classes. I was actually working for the university, so I could take pretty much any class I wanted, tuition free. That took me a few years to convince myself that I should be doing something else. But for a while, I just enjoyed attending just about every class that seemed remotely interested. So I got a pretty broad education at the time. And also my learning style is maybe a little unorthodox, where I actually learn best by myself. So, I mean, there were times where my classmates were sitting in class and I was sitting at the library studying the exact same thing using books. Yes. I usually find that it works best for my own style. I can get different perspectives. You know, I can read multiple things about the same topic. And I usually find that it gives me a more well-rounded perspective on things.
I can relate to that. I did my PhD at Manchester University, and I was spent a lot of my time going to other people's courses instead. So I found a lot of what I was doing quite dull, and there was some very interesting courses.
Yeah, I can somewhat relate. My degree was in economics, but I really spent more time studying other things once I completed my degree.
Well, as you come from economics, if you weren't going to do photography as a hobby, I mean, it needn't necessarily have been economics. What do you think it might have been?
Well, it's easier to answer in hindsight of what I would want to be. I would probably go into the sciences. I'm fascinated by physics and cosmology, and those are things that I would love to have done more research on and done for a living. But you know, that there's the practical side, there's the creative side, and then you need to balance them out. And I feel like I found a good balance in my own life.
Yes, there seems to be it's quite attractive. Photography is for, I won't say engineering type, but engineering, mathematicians, and music seem to be the three really popular topics that people from those areas are attracted to photography. I wonder why that is. It's a sense of wonder with the world, possibly.
It is. I also think there's a lack of balance in the way that education systems work in the Western world. You're either a vocational practitioner, or you're an academic, or you're an engineer. You don't really get the full breadth of things that you need to really nourish who you are. You know, so sometimes you're more an engineering type, but even the staunchest of engineers still have a creative side, and a lot of times it gets repressed and not discovered until quite late in life, and all of a sudden you look back and realize, you know, all these equations actually translate into something real and amorphous. And if you talk to scientists, you know, the more advanced you are in your fields, the more you realize how gray things get. You know, even things that you consider, you know, pretty straightforward, like mathematics, gets pretty philosophical once you get advanced enough, once you start considering, you know, multiple dimensions and matrix algebra. It's not as simple as a formula that you just feed values into. And I think there comes a point in time where you're just sufficiently adept at whatever you do that you realize that it's not what you thought it was when you started, and that somehow the creative and philosophical aspects of it come into play at some point.
In terms of the, I mean, photography itself is a very fine balance between art and craft. Mm-hmm. And there's a large number of photographers, probably many from an engineering background, that get slightly too obsessed with the craft side of it. But it has to be a balance, doesn't it? Do you think you can get to a point where you can get past all the craft, or is it always going to be an integral part of what you do?
I think it's always going to be an integral part. You do need to shift the balance, though. There are things that you want to, you know, focus on, no pun intended, when you're just starting out. You want to gain proficiency with your equipment. You want to understand light better. You want to understand the physics that are involved with, you know, lenses and measurements and sampling. But at some point, once you have mastered those, you really want to put them on the back burner and make some more room for more creative pursuits. After all, it's not about owning a camera. It's about what you do with it. And I think that's where a lot of people get caught. You know, once you're at the intersection, you can either keep doing what you're doing, keep pursuing, you know, whatever icon checklist, whatever formulas that you're used to doing, you know, the near-far compositions, the sunrise, sunset. It's all very formulaic, but it takes some courage to move past that and say, you know, right now I want to move towards saying something that is mine, something that is part of who I am, that comes out of my own creative thinking, and not just keep doing the same thing. And I think a lot of people end up giving up on photography if they don't make that transition, because it just becomes boring. You just keep doing the same thing over and over again. You pretty much just dial it in, you know, okay, I'm going to be there 15 minutes before sunrise. I'm going to set my aperture here, I'm going to push the button, then I'm going to go have coffee. It's just not as satisfying as saying, you know, I'm just going to go into Terra Incognita and whatever I find there and whatever inspires me and whatever I feel once I get there is what I want to convey to my audience.
In terms of that, do you think that, I mean, I've developed in photography, I've been looking at composition, looking at projects, and as I've gone on, I've started to look beyond the single photograph and mm-hmm. started to look at series of photographs or projects, and it seems there is a lot of people want to make that one perfect photograph rather than trying to create a story with a set of photographs. How do you feel about that balance?
Well, I definitely see that shift in my own work as well. I think what happens over time is your message becomes more complex. So it's just more to convey than you could in a single photograph. Obviously, there's always going to be that masterpiece that has it all, and there's room for that. But sometimes the concept is more nuanced than that. It's not just, you know, here's a pretty place or, you know, here's an interesting arrangement. It becomes more about what you want to say about the place and about yourself. Sometimes one image is just not enough to do that. You mentioned yourself, you know, in the email that you sent me, you mentioned Sternfeld, for example. If you look at his images one at a time, they seem, you know, pretty generic. But once you look at them at the body of work, they mean a lot more. You know, you see the center composition, you see the people, but they're no longer just here's a picture of a person. It's just here's a series of different people doing different things, feeling different things, interacting in different ways, and the story becomes more complex. And ultimately, that's what we want to do with our work, right, is we want to tell stories. And, you know, sometimes stories can be told in an essay, and sometimes they require a novel. It just depends on the story that you want to tell.
Yeah. And on the end of that, I suppose, The photo book is something that's becoming, well, in a contemporary world anyway, the photo book's becoming more important almost. It's the focal point, the points of creation where a project comes together. Do you see the book as a very important means of distribution, because prints aren't accessible to everybody and, mm-hmm. and the monitor isn't the best presentation tool?
Correct. And I think there needs to be, there's room for everything, but I think there needs to be a more granular approach to this. There's some things that are best conveyed in a book, some things are best conveyed in a print, and some things are best conveyed in an electronic format. The way I see the book industry going right now is I think the coffee table book, the exhibition format book, it is very difficult to replace. And there will always be a market for that, because it's not necessarily the people that want to read about the place. These are the people that want to collect. They want something beautiful. They want a beautiful object that they can, you know, get an experience from. And the coffee table book does that. But things like instructional books, things like a guidebook, there is really no reason for those to not be in electronic format, because electronic format is becoming so available and accessible and convenient and compact. And it just seems superior to the printed format in practically every way, other than that experience of actually looking at a paper print, of actually having that experience of, you know, setting up your environment. You know, when I look at a photography book, I don't just pull it out of the shelf and, you know, just go sit anywhere. You know, I find a comfortable place to sit. I get myself something nice to drink, and I take my time to go through it and really appreciate it in detail. It's not just something that you read on a bus. So, I think there's room for all of them, and I think some will survive just because they're used in different ways. Anyway, that's just my outlook.
So basically, things like the iPad may end up 300 dpi, so we have just have alternative methods of consumption. Mm-hmm. Because we're always in different areas or different points.
It is, and I think also the electronic medium is developing to provide experiences that were not previously possible. You know, for example, the ability to enlarge and drill down into an image. You know, if you look at an image on the screen, you get the whole experience, but then you there's a little piece of it that you find more interesting, and you can zoom in and take a closer look at it. But those are things that you couldn't do with a book, you know, unless you maybe had a magnifying glass, but even then you'd be limited. So anyway, I think the experiences are different, and the ones that will succeed really depends on how acceptable those experiences become. And I think some things, you know, the electronic media can substitute paper and even do better, but other things it can't.
In terms of owning a gallery, I mean, there aren't many people who have the privilege of owning a gallery and a few that are able to exhibit in one. Most photographers consume other photography on the internet, and they are getting feedback from other photographers mainly. Was it a revelation to you to see more members of the public give you feedback on your photography?
I wouldn't say a revelation, maybe more a confirmation of what I already suspected. You know, photographers have a very unique way of looking at the world and looking at photographs because they're so confident in their own ability to produce similar work. They're not always as interested in the content. They're more interested in the method. They're more interested in learning techniques. They're more interested in locations. And that influences their impression of your image. You know, usually there's a high impact initial introduction to the work where they see it and it's interesting to them. And then the next thought that comes to their minds is, how can I do that? Rather than, I want this on my wall, you know. So it's a different way of approaching the work. And you're right, you know, photographers are not always very complimentary of other photographers' work or very respectful of it. Of course, there's a lot of exceptions to that. As the general public, you know, general public, and it's a double-edged sword. You know, sometimes they will see something and they know it's beautiful and they know it affects them and they know that it evokes some emotion in them and they relate to the work, but they might not necessarily appreciate those things that you spend so much money and effort on. You know, you went out and bought the camera that can produce that large, you know, 30 by 40 print. To them, it's just obvious that a print should be sharp.
Yeah.
You know, they don't really care how much the camera costs. And if it's not, then it's a problem. So, yeah, anyway, the considerations are different. The conversations are very different. I've always leaned more towards the emotional appeal of the work. And that's what I try to communicate in my work. You know, when somebody walks into the gallery and I can see them studying things very carefully, I know that they're probably a photographer. And the conversations are very different. You know, people come in and say, wow, this is beautiful. You know, is this real? That's almost always the question. And you have to explain to them all the nuances of what constitutes real without, you know, being too judgmental or too, I don't know, without promoting your own point of view too much, and just getting them to see things the way that you saw them. And, you know, it's all real because it's real in your mind. Whether they would have perceived it the same way if they were standing right next to you, it's usually they wouldn't.
Do you get the wonderful phrase, it almost looks like a painting, very often?
I do. And, you know, that one is also sort of a mixed blessing. You know, I think some people say it with the intention of paying you a compliment.
It is a compliment.
and you have to treat it as such. You know, you're not going to make fans by saying, you know, you're an idiot for thinking that. But really, there should be more education from creative photographers about the differences between the two media.
Yeah. My colleague who runs the website with me, Joe Cornish, has an exhibition on at the moment with a painter in Scarborough in a museum. And he was very nervous about putting his photography side by side on the wall with paintings, and they're two very different worlds, and sticking them side by side, I can see causing a slight bit of stress.
Yeah, and you know, painting is one thing, but I've heard from people that they wanted, you know, a mouse pad with my image on it, or you know, things like that. And you know, it's at some point you take offense to that because that's not how you see it, but you have to consider what it is that they're trying to say, whether they're saying it articulately or not. You know, when somebody says, I want this on my mouse pad, they're really saying, I want to look at this all day long.
Yes.
And
from your point of view, are there many, we've got a photography competition in the UK that's just about to have its, the results broadcast. And it causes a fair amount of stress and turmoil every time it comes around in terms of who gets through to the next round. why mm-hmm. certain pictures were chosen. I'm presuming that there are competitions of the same sort in America. I mean, what are your feelings about competitions, and do you enter any?
I never enter competitions. For me, the art and competition are just inherently incompatible. You're pretty much trying to appeal to the tastes of a very small group of people whom you know nothing about and who decide the value of your work. And I'm just not comfortable with that with that whole idea. You know, I'd rather put my work out there for the people who would find it appealing and not necessarily for a specific group of people who may decide if it makes it to the next round. I also think in general, just looking at competitions and results, I'm often embarrassed by what gets through, and not just in terms of quality of the work, but in terms of the education of the judges. There was a recent competition, for example, where the winning image, there were several categories, and in at least two or three of them, the winning images were almost exact copies of Ansel Adams images or images of other photographers. In one case, I know that the winning photographer actually hired the original photographer to take them to the spot where they made the image, made a copy of the image, submitted it to the contest, and won first place. Yes. And that tells me that the judges had no idea that that image had already been made by somebody else. And when you think about it, it's like entering a painting competition where I could, you know, submit an exact copy of a Van Gogh and the judge would have no idea who Van Gogh was.
Yes.
And that happens a lot in contests because the judges tend to be people in the industry rather than academics, rather than people who have studied photography. So, you know, just because someone is a photo editor and is really good at deciding what image goes with what text and how to lay it out doesn't necessarily make them an expert on fine art photography.
In terms of subject matter of photography, well, I mean, we call ourselves landscape photographers, and yet the definition of landscape is quite loose, I mean, especially if you look at the contemporary world of landscape photography. I mean, do you have any particular personal definition, and do you work outside that genre?
I like to think that it's more nuanced than that, and you know, my bigger pet peeve is nature photographer, you know, because I look at what I do and I look at what, you know, adventure photographers do and it's not what I do. And I look at what travel photographers do and it's not what I do. And I look at, you know, the kind of photographs that get published in National Geographic and that's not what I do. What I do is fine art landscape photography, which is very different from all of the above. It has different motivations, so different purpose, different audience. And that again goes back to the issue of educating the public, you know, consumers of paintings, for example, can very easily discern between an impressionist painting and a cartoon. But you talk to anybody and show them a photograph, they immediately expect it to be one thing and only one thing. It has to be some documentary record of, you know, reality, whatever it happens to be, with absolutely no leeway. And I think that a lot of it is derived from just general public ignorance of what photography can be used for. You know, just because you use a tool doesn't mean you always want to make the same thing. You know, if I, you know, pick up a pencil, maybe I want to write, maybe I want to, you know, sketch. It's not always the same thing. But in photography, it's not the same. And a lot of the blame, in my opinion, goes to photographers because photographers play into these stereotypes, sometimes knowingly, sometimes unknowingly. Some of them got into photography with that belief and they just carry it forward without really rethinking it. And some of them just promote it because it sells. Either way, I think it's detrimental to the more artistic pursuits of photography.
Are we talking about the photographer as observer only, which seems to be quite popular in the landscape photography world, where it has to be an exact reproduction of reality?
It is. And, you know, truth be told, that there are a lot more photographers than there are painters. You know, practically anybody that owns a camera considers themselves a photographer, and they come into it with their own, you know, notions and sensibilities and what they think the medium is about. And the more rooted those perceptions become and then the less flexibility there is, the less room there is for art, because art has to be the product of an artist. You know, just because you found something and it's beautiful doesn't make it artistic. A work of art has to represent the person behind it, not just random revelation, not just random, you know, found beauty. And a lot of people miss that aspect of creative or artistic photography, where when you look at an image, you don't just consider it, you know, it's not just a tree, it's not just a rock. There's a certain arrangement here that is the product of a creative mind behind it, and that person wanted you to see something a certain way, and you've got to ask yourself why they wanted you to see it that way and what they expect you to get from it. I still think there's a long way to go in terms of appreciation of fine art photography, as opposed to just using photography as a medium for, you know, here's something interesting I found and I want to share it.
Yeah. I mean, do you look at the contemporary side of landscape photography and see anything you like? I mean, as I say, we're talking looking at Edward Butinsky or Mishrak or Elgaresa, etc. Do any of these photographers appeal to you?
Well, they do. I have to make a distinction here because photography does rely on real elements. So there's this duality where, you know, looking at a Bertinsky image, for example, at first glance, it's very easy to be swept by the beauty of it. You know, it's just perfectly composed, gorgeous colors. And then the notion starts to sink in of what it is that you're looking at. And, you know, it's usually decay and destruction. and trying to make that connection in your mind, which I think is what appeals to me about the work, is it makes me think. You know, I'm looking at something that's really, it's an open pit mine that's probably polluted that whole area. There are probably people walking around with all kinds of diseases because of it, but it is just so visually beautiful. And that helps you think about other things. You know, you extrapolate from that to other areas of life, or, you know, just because something is convenient or beautiful or, you know, makes you happy, doesn't necessarily make it good. And so that's where the interpretive part of it comes in. And so I find a lot of contemporary photography very powerful in that aspect. But it really depends on the person behind it. Again, you know, what it is that they're trying to say. If it's somebody who just wants to produce something that is visually beautiful with complete disregard to what it is, I'm not going to get much from it. You know, just looking at the street scene, you know, because it has pretty colorful light, but there's no message behind it, doesn't really do much for me. But looking at, you know, a Bertinsky print, there's more to it than just the visual beauty of it.
Do you have any projects at the moment that you're working on that are more concept-based rather than location-based?
I do. And actually, my work is entirely concept-based. You know, I don't reveal the locations of my work. I don't think it's relevant to what it is. I try to educate my audience to read the story rather than obsess about the tools that I use to write it, you know. And so, yeah, I have several things that I'm working on right now. You know, I've been focusing a lot on the intimate landscape genre for a long time. I want to develop it a little bit further, in terms of right now, I'm focusing mostly on the processing side rather than the capture side. You know, I've gotten to a point where I feel my compositions have reached a certain level of maturity, and now I need to help them move forward. So, like I said, create a body of work rather than a best of collection of, you know, different interesting patterns. So that's one thing that's on my mind. And really, at any given time, I'll have three or four different ideas, you know, just rattling in my head. And just because of the nature of photography, sometimes you know where to find those things that will help you make that image. And sometimes you just need to keep an open mind. And when something, you know, triggers that recognition that there is something there that might fit into one of those themes that you would be able to work in and make it fit with the rest of that body of work.
I know you used to use 4-5 cameras and film, and I'm not going to get into which one's better or which one's different or whatever. But what I'm interested in asking is, do you see the use of a certain type of camera or a certain tool changes the photographs you take? So whether it's a view camera or a compact with a fold down mirror, the holding a type of tool and interacting with it dictates the type of photographs you take or influences it subliminally. Do you agree with that?
I think it will if you let it. I think it will by default, because, you know, people don't like to recognize it, and, you know, this is not said as a pointing a finger at anyone, but we are motivated by laziness. You know, we want to do the least amount of work to get what we need to do. And so I noticed a long time ago that the phenomena of lens vision, where whatever lens happened to be mounted on your camera will dictate what you're looking at. You know, if you have a long lens on, you'll be looking for details, you'll be looking for wildlife. If you have a wide angle lens, you'll be looking at the sky, because you don't want to change the lens. Yes. And whether that's something that you consciously do or something that's just part of the natural, you know, laziness is probably more the latter. But I think it's important to consciously force yourself to see the things that you need to see. And then it doesn't really matter what your medium is. You know, you can walk around with just about any camera. If you can compose and visualize without using any camera whatsoever and then fit the tools to the image that you're visualizing, then you know you've achieved maturity when it comes to the use of your tools. If your images differ based on the kind of tool that you're using, then I don't think you're quite there yet.
In terms of finding the composition and honing the elements of a composition, do you do that with the camera or do you do it with a viewing square?
No, I do it all in my mind. My camera never comes out until I know exactly what I want to capture.
Yeah, so all the corners, all the lines and edges are worked out before the camera comes out.
Exactly. I have my composition, I have my framing, I have everything in my mind before I ever set up the camera.
So you don't use just a square piece of card to try and work out where the edges are or anything? It's just visualizing?
No, I don't. I used to, and it's a very useful technique. But I think with enough experience, it becomes easier to see things. And every now and then, I'll still, you know, use my fingers to try to hide and block certain things and frame things differently. But that's about as far as I go in terms of compositional aids. Other than that, I've become, I guess, proficient enough to be able to look at something and know where I want to draw that frame line. And for me, that's one of the most critical composition decisions that you can make. You know, if you ask most photographers about composition, you always hear rule of thirds and leading line, and that's about where the composition lesson ends. But there is so much to it. You know, if you do your research, if you read about visual perception, if you read about some of the science behind Gestalt theory and how visual perception works and how trained your brain is to see certain things and notice certain things, that there are things that you wouldn't expect. For example, you know, the human brain is much better at estimating distances horizontally than it is vertically. And I'm sure that served some sort of evolutionary purpose at some point, but it just plays into the way that we see things. And the same thing with the kind of things that we find visually attractive. And so once you become aware of those, the composition exercise becomes more an intuitive one rather than a formulaic one. You know, it's not just, you know, place this thing at the intersection of the rule of thirds and you're done. It's more about, okay, there are all these forces in the scene. There are all these things that are feeding off each other and playing off each other, and you want to arrange them in the best possible way.
Yeah. In terms of the aspect ratio of that you work with, I mean, if you're working on a composition without aid of the camera, presumably you can find any aspect ratio picture you like.
Exactly, and that's part of what I teach in my workshop, is don't become a slave to your viewfinder. Yeah. If you only see your world through the viewfinder, you only see it at a certain perspective. There are a lot of things that you're going to miss, a lot of compositions that don't fit into that aspect ratio. But if you train your mind to see the image and draw the boundaries, it almost doesn't matter. Either you crop the frame or you stitch multiple frames or you shoot a larger frame. You want the image to be the way that you want it, not have the camera dictate what it is.
Yeah. We recently had a little article on image theft and image sizes run by a colleague who... I put my pictures at very large sizes on the internet. It's a decision based on my time in the music industry when I was working as a record scout, and I saw the fact that the music industry was getting copyright all wrong. And also I've worked in open source software for quite a while, where giving things away brings large returns. And I've yet to find anybody who's actually printed out or used any of my images illegally as such. I mean, I use Creative Commons on them, so there is a license as such. Do you think that there are people out there who are pinching pictures, printing them out, and trying to make money out of them?
I think there might be people like that out there, but that's money that they wouldn't pay you anyway.
Yes.
So even whether they steal your picture or somebody else's picture, it's not like you would actually get paid if you prevented them from doing that. So in that sense, you're not really losing much You know, if anything, it might be good marketing if you manage to get your branding in through your image, even if somebody steals it. And I definitely don't condone it. But at some point, you just have to face the reality of it. You know, people will do that. Some people will not play by the rules. Some people do not respect copyright law. And ultimately, you want to provide the best possible experience to your viewers and just ignore the rest. You know, I think the rest is just noise. You know, it is very, very annoying when somebody takes that image that you put so much work and thought into and turns it into, you know, a cell phone background and posts it on some website for people to download. Yeah, so you get mad, but what are you going to do about
it? It's an emotional thing rather than a business decision, I think, isn't it?
Right, right. But you don't want to disenfranchise the people who do care about your work and want to get the best viewing experience of your images just to prevent those little annoyances, which, like it or not, they're going to be there.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for the conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tim. I appreciate it.